Welcome to the Minivade Gang Podcast, episode 124. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim. Oh, great. Another rainy weekend, Elliot.
Yeah, we got the blues down here in Lakeville. nothing but the gray skies out here.
And Graham, no, I did not get in on the LinkedIn IPO thickens.
Hey, that was some mellow music. I like that.
You know, I got to tell you, there's a lot of PodSafe music out there if you're willing to look for it. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, but you always get some good stuff.
But let's talk about that LinkedIn IPO. I'm so sorry. We forgot about Phil. Phil's hosting the panel discussion at the social media breakfast today, so he's not going to be joining us. And sorry, Phil. Anyway, that LinkedIn IPO, Phil was one person that asked me what I thought about whether or not it'd be a good investment. And I didn't expect that it would double in value in one day.
Well, a lot of people don't realize, Steve, that it actually opened for trading at 83. So, you know, I don't think any Joe Schmoes were buying it at 45 bucks.
No.
And there's so few shares out there that, you know, you'd have been lucky to get your hands on some at 83. It was a pretty crazy open, if you've been reading about it.
It seems like it was underpriced.
Well, yeah, it's obvious now, I guess, that it was underpriced. They were ready to do the IPO at 26 or 28 bucks a share,
and oh, really?
They repriced it. You know, they could see the demand was there, which is the final, you know, in the final days, the investment bankers set the price. And it's always a job to figure out, where do we come in? We don't want to go too high and have the thing flop, but we don't want to go too low and leave money on the table.
Yeah.
Well, they said, we're going to do it at 45. Well, I just read in the journal this morning, it opened at 83.
Okay. All right.
And, sounds like an inside job to me.
Well, there's just so much demand for, and everybody's calling it. It's, you know, we're back to the bubble, you know, it's Netscape all over again. But I just think it's fascinating to compare the number of 109% they're saying was the first day pop for LinkedIn, but you know, that's not one of the highest at all.
Oh no.
There's VA Linux is crazy high, but you know, something like 698%. But remember, our own Minnesota-based Secure Computing had a first day pop of 274% back in 95. They had been a client of mine, and that's still in the, you know, in the top probably 10 tech IPO first day gains. So 109% ain't bubble territory. It's 0.10.
It's not, but also it's really the first significant tech IPO in a long time. And you know, especially in this economy. The one thing that I thought was interesting was that article that you sent off, the GigaOm article about Facebook and LinkedIn and so on, had one paragraph in it that just absolutely hit me when I thought about the value prop of LinkedIn. It says LinkedIn's unique asset is it has no real competitors, very heavy barriers to entry, high profit margins, completely organic traffic growth, and it also has no dependencies. And I thought, that sort of sums up the proverbial defensible value prop.
Yep. So yep. It sure does. And you know, the Bill Gurley, who was quoted in that article, a top VC at Benchmark, really does see it as, you know, opening up IPOs for other tech firms. There are many in the wings, you know, not just Groupon and possibly Facebook next year, but there are several others that are in the wings. And essentially, he says that this is just going to help the whole tech startup ecosystem overall, you know, not just IPO candidates.
Yeah.
So we all should be popping champagne.
Well, Tim, I'm curious, you know, because I see both you and Graham on and a lot of other people that I know. But I mean, how active are you in LinkedIn? How much do you actually use it?
Not very much, actually.
Yeah.
You know, I'll go in there once a week and, you know, someone will want a connection or ask a question or whatever. But yeah, it's not like Facebook where you're in it all the time, every day.
Yeah,
I agree. It's for people like us that are independently employed. I mean, we're not, you know, looking for jobs. It's more something for the corporate types, let's face it. And, you know, I've been on it since August 2003. I think I told you I got the personal email from Reid Hoffman. Ooh. 4 or 5 weeks ago. It actually had a real digital signature at the bottom. And of course, it was going to the first 100,000 users. I was 18,000 and something. And I'm thinking, oh, this is great. I'm reading down through the email. I'm thinking, oh, cool. He's got something for me. T-shirt, maybe? Nothing. Just thank you. Okay. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, it's mostly just answering requests of people that want to connect with me. And, you know, a lot of recruiters, many of which I ignore if I don't know them, if they aren't local or have some specific reason to be that I'd want to be connected to them.
Well, and you know what I find interesting is Quora, the question and answer site, which I was excited about for about a day and a half. Yeah. And now I don't really use it that much, but yeah. I participate a little bit in some groups in LinkedIn, but
yes.
it's not something that I invest a lot of time in. I'm more like you, Tim, you know, in terms of just kind of popping in and out of there maybe every other day or every few days. So
yeah, no, it doesn't seem to be promote as much engagement as say Facebook does or Twitter.
Yeah. So. Well, I wanted just to throw out another big story before we bring our guest on today, but just because it's everywhere that Apple causes religious reaction in the brains of fans, say neuroscientists.
Like we didn't know that.
But that that when people visualize an Apple product, they have the same mental stimulation that they would viewing a deity, you know, or an icon of a deity and so on. So I'm just waiting for Steve Jobs to get up on stage and, you know, bring up a journalist and, you know, you shall be healed. do a laying of hands. And
oh, well, maybe that's coming on June 6th,
WWDC. Yeah.
Oh, man.
We're not going to make it that far, though, because the world comes to an end.
Saturday.
This weekend. Yeah. Saturday at 6 p.m. on the dot.
Yeah. Well, okay.
We probably will make it that far because we'll be here for the tribulation. So,
well, that means I don't have to make my bed in the morning as long as the world's ending.
Yeah.
So,
well, what's interesting is that prediction is it's ending at 6 p.m. every time zone, so we'll have plenty of warning.
Oh, that would be nice. So Australia will send us. Yeah.
So your countrymen, their grandma, they're going to hit it first.
I can see the subject line now. It's coming, mate.
Yeah. All right, but I got to ask you guys a question. Is there was also an article about technology in the Catholic Church and how the Pope has come out talking about how technology is not a replacement for God. And that a lot of people are looking to technology to fill that need.
Was this in direct reaction to the Apple article?
It very well could have been, yeah. But the funny part of that is what would you do if there were news reports that it did hit Australia first and the rapture occurred and, you know, 80% of the population was gone? What would you do?
That would be time for serious reflection.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yep. Well, hopefully they'll have time to tweet before they depart the earth.
No, I think it's this year.
Give
just
us a
gone.
Heads up.
You know, okay. Grab the champagne and tweet, baby.
That series of movies years ago. I mean, they were gone.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Anyway, but the funny thing is, the Pope, I hear, has an iPad.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Well.
So maybe there's a connection there. I don't know.
Huh. Does the Vatican have an app yet? That's the question.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to look that up.
There probably is an app for that.
Yeah.
Well, somebody was doing that reminds me of, you could do your confession on an iPhone app. That happened early on in the App Store days. Some guy came out with a way you could do your confession.
Confession, yeah. Yeah. Well, the Vatican did in fact come out and say that iPhone app can't forgive sins. That only a priest can forgive sins.
You know, there you go. Yeah. Yeah. So
there's no absolution through apps. Doggone it. Anyway. Well, you know, let's bring on our guest, only because, you know, it seems as though we never talk about desktop apps anymore, that everything is cloud-based, that it's all web apps and everything's internet-centric. Of course, that's what we do at Minovate, but there's nobody in this market or in this region that's doing more than our pals at Visy. Yeah. And aren't they the biggest Minnesota data center?
Yeah, that's they definitely have that designation. And you know, now that they've been acquired by a larger public firm, they've got even deeper pockets behind them. And we saw the announcement of the opening of their formal opening of their Eden Prairie data center. Yep. With a $10 million investment. So they're a serious player.
You know, we've got to get over there and have a tour, because I had a tour when it was empty. Mm-hmm. We've got to take a look and see what that's like. Well, we have the distinct pleasure today of having Mike Suwata, the CEO of Visy, on. And I would like to know more, Graham, about TDS, the telecommunications company that mm-hmm. acquired Visy, because, you know, was this strictly to get into the data business and get away from just being dependent on voice?
Well, I would think so. I will have to ask Mike. I'm not really sure if it was their first cloud or hosting you know, company that they'd acquired. I suspect it may have been, or it was one of the first, and that was last year sometime, I believe, when that sale was closed.
Okay. Well, I'm giving him a call now, so we'll bring Mike in.
Hello, Mike Suwata speaking.
Mike, Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott and Graham Thickens. How you doing?
Good morning to you. I'm just fine, thanks.
Excellent.
Hey Mike, this is Graham.
Hey, Graham, long time no see.
Yeah. I know you guys have been busy, though.
Yeah, well, I keep hearing from Jason. You're out and about, and he runs into you quite a bit. I unfortunately haven't been able to be as social or attend events like normal.
Well, Jason and I are fraternity brothers, too, so the last time we saw each other was at one of those events. But Jason being the co-founder and CTO, hey, tell us about the latest with Visy. You put out an announcement about the Eden Prairie data center. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Oh, no problem. I mean, well, the exciting news is that TDS with Visy is investing more in our Eden Prairie data center. We're building out another phase at approximately a little over $10 million, being frankly driven by demand. We've had good success getting companies in here. Unfortunately, I apologize. Almost every one of them makes us sign a confidentiality agreement that we can't disclose. It's kind of the nature of the business. But along that lines, we're in essence doubling all of our power and over doubling our cooling infrastructure within our facility so that we can service more customers.
Yeah.
You know, to me, what it shows, you know, to the Twin City market is Visy's and TDS's commitment to this market and to keep expanding.
Sure, sure. Well, yeah, I imagine the data center is filling up. Steve and I were just talking that we had a tour of it when it was still kind of empty, but and you got a lot of space over there. I know that.
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes you guys got to come out again, and I'll be glad to give you a tour and take you out for a bite to eat.
Sure.
We had a new customer go live with a very interesting environment, and it's very interesting to take a look at it and to see how, you know, it's not of the normal install. We've had a lot of people be interested in it and excited about it and, frankly, curious about doing something similar.
Yeah, well,
more of
I know
a clean room atmosphere within a data center.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, huh. I know Steve had a question before you came on about TDS. Maybe I'll let Steve go ahead and ask the question.
Yeah. Well, sure. One of the things I was curious about, and it kind of harks back to when Ed Zander joined as CEO of Motorola and was showing off a new handset and having the mobile CEOs say, you know what, we don't care about voice anymore. It's all about data. And so it was all, he wanted smartphones, all these mobile CEOs. And so the question, I guess, has to do with TDS. And were they primarily focused on voice and getting engaged with Visi was a data play?
I would say a little bit. I mean, yes, they're focused, I'd say, more on the wireline business.
Okay.
But the wireline was voice and data. I mean, they sold a bunch of T1s and other traditional mechanisms for communication of voice and data. So it definitely wasn't purely a voice play. Obviously, their U.S. cellular division is much more around residential cellular.
Right.
But the main thing, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that the wireline business has pretty much reached saturation.
Mm-hmm.
For you to win a customer, you got to steal it from somebody else.
Yeah.
There's, you know, the market is overall really isn't growing. On the side of data center, co-location, you know, business data, that part of the business is still growing. If you read like tier one research, you know, it's growing 20 to 28% a year. We're still in relatively the early adoption phase. And so TDS took a look at their legacy business, which is a great revenue generating machine and cash flow machine, and is investing that in their future growth. And they took about 2 years, looked at a bunch of different industries, a bunch of different businesses, and settled on the data center and managed services business, and of which Visi was their first acquisition. Then they followed it with Team in December of last year. And, you know, they're pretty vocal in that they're aggressive on looking at other acquisitions.
What was
Hopefully
that?
We'll be able to announce something soon.
What was that last one they acquired?
Team Technologies. They had three facilities, two in Iowa and one in Wisconsin.
Oh, okay. So they like the central part of the country, obviously, since they're based. You know, I always thought they were based in Madison, but I saw Business Journal said they're based in Chicago. Is that
true?
Yeah,
it's kind of interesting. Their corporate headquarters, which I'd call almost a holding company, is based in Chicago.
Okay.
But TDS Telecom is based out of Madison, and most of the holding company employees are also based out of Madison.
I see. Okay. Yeah.
It's an interesting arrangement, but, you know, with large Fortune 500s, you know, things like that happen.
Sure. Oh, yeah. So give us an idea of the scale of this company. How big is it? What are the annual revenues and how many employees and that sort of thing?
So from an employee count, we're now, I believe, just north of 110, about 112 when you look at Visi and Team combined.
Sure. Well, I meant TDS overall, too. Any idea?
TDS?
I mean, thousands, I'm sure, right? Or...
Oh, yeah. I believe, well, I focus more on my division.
Right.
So I believe they're at like 7 or 12,000. It's a lot. I affectionately refer to it as the horde.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Yeah.
And I'm sure their revenues are hundreds of millions a year, right? Overall.
Yeah, it's all listed public, so I'm not sharing anything unusual. But TDS Telecom, which is their wireline division, which I fall in, their revenues are around $800 million a year.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So this is a big big company. Go ahead.
I have a question for Mike. What do you see as the biggest opportunities in front of you as you continue to grow Visy's business over the next several years?
Oh, from that standpoint, it's a multiple prong strategy. I mean, right now we have 5 data centers in Iowa, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. We're absolutely looking to expand our territory. We're absolutely looking to expand our penetration in each and every one of those markets. So that's from a co-location standpoint. Then we're building other services upon it. I mean, Visy has always had managed services, you know, dedicated servers to database administration, OS administration, monitoring, a whole bunch of things. We'll be adding to that portfolio, which we will be able to sell throughout all those facilities. And then, as you're well aware, with ReliaCloud and other cloud offerings that we have, we're expanding in that front also. Our first, you know, kind of mega goal is to be the dominant provider here in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm. So last week's podcast, we talked about what came out of Google I.O., and I guess the Chromebook is, you know, one of those things that may kind of be a game changer, particularly in the enterprise. Do you see your business increasing as people, you know, use more cloud-based services like a Cloudbook?
Yeah, I mean, from a standpoint, cloud's been real interesting. I mean, you know, all three of you know there's a lot of hype to it, but there's also a lot of reality. I find it really interesting that we've won a lot of co-location deals, which is totally not cloud, purely because we have cloud offerings and purely because it's a step towards enterprises starting to outsource.
Sure.
It's their first comfort level of doing that. Mm-hmm. We also see, you know, cloud businesses using our data centers as one of their options to do, you know, more of a private cloud or to tie into our cloud environment. So it is driving on all fronts. I mean, like I said, it's winning us co-location business. We're winning a lot of what I'll call hybrid business, where they're using some cloud offerings, they're using some pure colo, they're using our cloud storage. And because we're a one-stop shop, we can provide all those solutions locally here in Minnesota. So there's a comfort level with, they know who we are. They know the people. You know, they know Jason, just like you do, Graham and Steve. Yep. They know myself, as opposed to I go do business with Amazon, and there's Jeff, you know, because I see him in the news. But I can't tell you one other employee in that entire organization.
Right, right.
So, you know, there's some of that. We're really competing on what we call either regionalism or localism, or saying you do care that it's an organization that, you know, either distance-wise or you know the people, because, you know, frankly, at the end of the day, you need to know who's got your back and who's protecting your key data or your key assets of your business. You know, the cloud, bless its heart, is accomplishing a lot of good things, but it does scare traditional enterprises with where is it really and who really has this information.
Yep.
And so, you know, we're trying to, you know, take advantage of that aspect that they need that's resolved or covered, but still providing, you know, the excitement, reliability, or the flexibility and the growth opportunities, and frankly, the cost structure opportunities that the cloud has to offer.
Yep. So one of the things that I'm curious about is, and I'm not going to name any names, but I've had some interesting conversations with internet architects who have talked about some of the I don't want to say failings, but some of the lack of understanding from companies' standpoint that they need to have content delivery networks, that they need to have an architecture that allows, especially the global players, allows them to ensure that their customers and potential customers, anywhere they happen to be in the world, have a good experience when they're interacting with their web applications and so forth. What are you guys doing with respect to partnering, or is it through TDS that you're gaining access to those sorts of services?
Well, from a standpoint of, you know, we have numerous technical individuals within our staff, and then, as I jokingly refer to, so does TDS with their horde. So we have that for our internal items. Most of our customers already are coming to us with either some of their own architects or they're using a third party that has figured out a lot of that stuff. And frankly, we're almost going to say an auditor or second opinion on it to say, you know, here's where we come. Does that make sense? Is that what you're seeing? I mean, the advantage we have is we get to see a lot of different implementations and a lot of different architectural ideas. And we see some that work and some that don't work, frankly. But we get to share that wisdom with our customers.
Got it.
Mike, I was going to drill in specifically to ReliaCloud and ask you for a little update on how that's going. And disclaimer, I helped Visi with the introduction of that business, in early 2009, I guess it was. So you've got 2 years plus now. How is it going? Are you seeing any interest at all from the enterprises, or is it still mostly, you know, startups and SMBs that are playing with the public cloud service that you offer?
Sure. We're definitely seeing more acceptance with the smaller organizations. The larger ones, it's typically net new development or some pilot project, Skunk Works project, something like that. We're seeing, as I kind of alluded to earlier, we're seeing a lot of people that are playing with that, but then they go, well, I want a private cloud environment and or a colocation environment. I just want to know that you have a future for me. They don't want to sign up for Visi and get heavily involved from an, you know, as physical assets or data assets and go, you know what, you don't have a future vision. So 2 years from now, I got to go find another vendor. So they like the fact that they can start with us in the basic stuff, whether it's ReliaCloud or a little co-location or what have you. And there's literally a path that we have that they shouldn't outgrow our ability to execute ever. And there's a lot of safety in that if you're a CIO of some business. Personally, I haven't, you know, Jason's definitely more active on the cloud environment, but outside of startups, I haven't seen any large organization who has just thrown it all in.
Right.
I kind of refer to it as I kind of come from, some of my background is the development side. I remember in the 80s, people going, COBOL's dead and it's going to go away and you'll never see it again. I can tell you right now, there's a lot of COBOL still running out there. Which is,
on mainframes.
Yeah, and it's still scary. You know, they're porting it to, you know, mid computers now. You know, it's, I know TDS has a big project where they're porting a COBOL app to, you know, to more, you know, standard equipment today, because a lot of huge enterprises, those are core systems still running. Now, is COBOL as common as it was 20 years ago? No. But, you know, cloud is taking momentum, but it's not going to take over everything, because it does take enterprises a long time to move, to evolve. And, you know, we're talking key data in a lot of cases, and no one wants to risk their job over it.
Well, and a lot of this stuff still works. I mean, I remember at being at Northwest Airlines in the IT group, giving a presentation once, this is many years ago, and they started to talk about how they even had apps that they'd written in Fortran. And I just thought, oh my God. And then they brought into the discussion the fact that they still had Boeing 727s that they'd purchased in 1963 and they were still flying. And so to your point, you can't just throw these apps out, especially if they're working.
I mean, you look at it, a business, I mean, I'll pick on Visi here. We're growing and there's a lot of things where, geez, we could do this better. But frankly, we'll get more return or more value by focusing on this net new item. Something else, it works. It's not broken. Just leave it alone. When we, you know, when it's justifiable from a cost structure or from a revenue opportunity, then we'll go take care of it. You know, if your old legacy COBOL system works and you have more important things to tackle or because of budget limitations, we'll let it ride. But
hey,
but, I
well,
mean, from a standpoint of the cloud, the big thing is, you know, from a cost structure standpoint, it absolutely makes sense.
Say, one other question I wanted to ask before we wrap, Mike. You touched on this earlier, the regional focus and the so-called advantage of being a regional cloud where local firms want to do business with a local hosting managed services company. There are compliance reasons why these companies sometimes need to know exactly where their data resides, right?
Yeah, we're seeing that more in like the healthcare arena. You've done much in healthcare, I mean, just the contracts are becoming a nightmare. They just can't sign up for a vanilla service because of HIPAA requirements that they're required and that their vendors are required. Mm-hmm. We've compared to, I'd say, 15 months ago, it is just dramatic how much that has changed. Mm-hmm. Also, we look at it from when we talk about cloud and the regional play, all of our cloud services, or frankly, when you sign up for cloud with somebody, you basically pay for compute resource and bandwidth. Mm-hmm. For us, if you're on our network, soon to, in essence, be all of TDS's network, bandwidth is included. Mm. So you're just paying for compute resources. So bandwidth almost becomes a tax if you are going long distances across multiple companies, multiple regions, as opposed to that localism. You're already on net. Mm-hmm. We're not charging you extra for that.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, and the fact that you have two data centers on each side of the river, I mean, you've got downtown St. Paul and Eden Prairie, that is obviously has appeal for many companies, right, to be able to have, you know, backup or mirroring or whatever you're doing with the two data centers, right, in some cases.
Oh, absolutely. We have a redundant 10 gig network connecting mm-hmm. those locations. Mm-hmm. And is in testing right now to connect to Madison. Soon we'll have the Iowa locations on it. And so we'll have that whole benefit from a business continuity and a disaster recovery standpoint.
Business continuity. That was the term.
It's very core. I mean, all the unfortunate episodes happening in Japan just mm-hmm. reinforce that. Had their earthquakes in what was it, Kyoto, many years ago, mm-hmm. An interesting stat was 80% of all businesses filed bankruptcy.
Oh my God.
Because
of
that one event in that region. That's, you know, when you have, you know, people's jobs, their houses, everything under that as a corporation, you owe it to everybody and your shareholders to make mm-hmm. sure that, you know, your business is around and that just one event doesn't take you out.
And the stakes are going up now that more and more of us are mapping our businesses onto the net.
I don't know, could you imagine a traditional business now trying to go back to pen and paper? I mean, it frankly wasn't that long ago. I remember, you know, 20 years ago, it's kind of like, well, if something really happens, we got paper, we got all our old processes still documented. You know, we can do everything on paper. It's like, right now. I mean,
well, I heard that 3M is going back to a post-it note strategy. So they're going to
they want to sell more. You know, so.
Exactly.
Hey, well, Mike,
I wish I would have discovered that item.
No kidding. Right. We should wrap up now and let you get back to your busy day, I'm sure. But thanks a lot for
Mike,
taking the time, and we really do appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. All three of you, anytime you want a tour here, please give us a call. We'd be more than happy to. Hope to see you guys around town.
Thanks, Mike.
Sounds great. Have a great day. And say hi to Jason.
Bye now.
Will do. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Wow. They're really making great progress over there, I'll tell you.
Yeah, I didn't realize they were tying into Madison and Iowa like that.
Well, they've got a data center in Cedar Falls, one in Des Moines, and then the Madison one, and then the two of them up here. Mm-hmm. So, you know what's interesting about that is that I had this long, long conversation with a guy that is a geologist that I know. He was actually an anthropologist at one point. This is a guy that I used to work with years ago, and we just were just sort of catching up, and we talked about earthquakes and natural disasters and all that sort of thing within the context of this hosting. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Yeah, you guys up there think you're fat, dumb, and happy that you don't have to worry about all that." He got into the whole discussion about the fault that's in the middle of the country here. What's it called again?
The one down in St. Louis.
Yeah. And how, There could be issues there, but also the Yellowstone caldera, which is 52 miles wide or in circumference, and how, you know, if there was anything happening there, how dramatically we'd be affected. So,
well, I think there was the biggest earthquake in the country's history over 100 years ago, and it was in this area.
Yeah. I've really? Heard that too.
Yeah. So it's not just San Francisco and LA that have those issues.
And wasn't there a mild one out in western Minnesota recently? I mean, a really mild one. Like, didn't I read something about Alexandria or something?
Oh, really?
It was, you know, like a 3-point something on the Richter scale, or it might not even have been that. But you know, earthquakes in Minnesota are not unheard of, although I don't think there's ever been a major one.
Well, all I can tell you is that when they talk about water being the oil of the 21st century, I'm glad we live.
Yes.
You know, 14,000 lakes, I think, is what
we're in a very good state for that. You know, and there's a local play here that's making really interesting investments in water technology.
Who?
The public company. Oh, God, I'm blanking on their name now.
Like Ecolab or?
No. There was just a news announcement about this. And I thought we should do something on that sometime because we've got a company right here in this state that's making, stacking up to become a leader in that field for, I don't know if it's, what do you call it? Sail, what do they call it? Where you convert ocean water to fresh water.
Oh, desalination.
Yeah. I don't know if it's in that space or it seems to me they have some technology there as well, but yeah, we should do that sometime. You know, that's tech. It's not internet tech maybe, but it's tech.
Yeah, there's that.
So yeah, well, so we should do that.
You know, and yes, this is a segue, but I just wanted to touch briefly on something that's been kind of interesting. And that is when we were at MHTA, I sat at a table with the CIO of XL Energy and some of his folks. And we got to talking about a bunch of different things related to the net and technology and internet over power line and where the heck is it and stuff like that. And both he and his number two had iPads and had iPhones, and they were talking about these devices. And I asked the question, you know, is this something that you'd ever provide to linemen, you know, people crawling up and down poles? And he smiled and he said, yeah, we're actually looking at all of this. He says, as soon as I got one, I began to ask myself the questions, how could we use this? And who could use this within the organization? He says, whether or not we roll it out is another story. But now that Apple has got this $1 billion data center and this big cloud push that's going on, you know, is this going to just significantly raise the awareness of cloud computing?
Well, with the marketing dollars Apple puts behind everything they do, it can't help but not elevate that. But, you know, I don't know. Tim, what do you think? Can the cloud be hyped any more than it already has been?
Well, they might legitimize it, actually. I mean, Apple's had kind of a checkered past with cloud applications.
Yeah, they sure have.
You know,
yeah.
iDisk and MobileMe being kind of not the greatest solution. So if they get it right, which I would expect them to do with iCloud or whatever they call it, it could legitimize the whole space, but you know, Google and Amazon are both pushing this very aggressively with services now. So, you know, I'm not sure if there will be a huge bump when Apple gets in, if they don't get in fairly quickly. And I guess I would expect next month at WWDC they would announce something along those lines.
Well, that's what the news reports are saying. Well, certainly about the iCloud Music Locker, right? Mm-hmm. That's the talk now that it's going to be probably announced there. Do we know that's going out there, by the way, this year? Anybody?
I don't know of anybody. I'm assuming that, you know, Do App and those kind of people will be going.
I don't think they normally go. Bill Hyman has gone for several years, but I don't know if he's going this year or not, but I'll have to ask him. Well, because we could. Well, how about Julio? Or no, Julio? He doesn't get passes to that, does he?
I don't think he does. No.
As a major media reporter, no. It's got to be a developer. So yeah, I'm sure somebody's going. It'd be fun to do a remote. podcast if we could.
Well, but here's
it doesn't matter because it's going to be about the cloud, right?
Yeah, right.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, but here's one of the things that I thought was interesting. So my wife went to London and left Wednesday morning. She left Wednesday. And beforehand, she said, okay, I want to buy a Kindle. It's like, what? Where'd that come from? She said, well, because there's three books that I want. That I want to take with me, but I don't want to buy them as books and shove them in my briefcase. And so she was looking for an iPad too, but it's impossible to get them. So she ended up buying a Kindle. And then literally moments later, I see this article, Amazon now selling more Kindle books than print books.
Yeah. 2-1. Apparently.
Oh my God.
Isn't that amazing?
It's incredible. It's like, cause I wasn't paying attention to that. And it's like, my God.
Well, you can get those Kindles now for almost like $100 at Target. I mean, I think it's $115, something like that.
Well, it's $115, except you have ads that pop up. And she bought the one for $189 because she wanted the tiny form factor, but it's because it has 3G. So the 3G is free. And so here we are driving out to the airport and it was fully charged and all that, but she hadn't downloaded all the books she wanted. So she's sitting there buying books in the car.
What do you mean it's free? How can 3G be free?
They have something called WhisperNet. And so if you want to buy a book, if you want to subscribe to a newspaper or a magazine or a blog, yes, you have to pay money to download blogs and so forth for 99 cents a month, I think. Then built into that, their gross margin for the purchase of those products is the bandwidth to download. So it's got free 3G built into it. Now you can't use it for email and there's some limited web surfing you can do, but it sucks pretty bad. But yeah, so she's buying books on the way.
It has Wi-Fi though.
Too. It has Wi-Fi. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Oh, all for $169 bucks, huh?
$189
for that one. Yeah.
You can get them for $140, I think they are, without the ad subsidy, which are just Wi-Fi only.
Yep.
But my son had a Kindle 2 that unfortunately just died, so we're going to get him another one that was only 3G. So it didn't have Wi-Fi. So it only had the WhisperNet. And I think that WhisperNet was provided by Sprint, that now it's provided by AT&T. So she can go into any Starbucks and get connected.
Oh, what's interesting about that? Well, I mean, I can now with the iOS device because I'm on the AT&T network. Anywhere I can go to any McDonald's or Starbucks and to get on free Wi-Fi, but the interesting thing to me was the e-ink technology for the Kindle. It gives you something like, if you turn the radio off, you get like, a week and a half or something of battery life.
Yeah.
And I do find myself sometimes when I'm reading a book on the iPad, as much as I love color and video and big images and yada, 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 I am very aware of the battery use, even though it's, huge, it's 10 or 11 hours. I'm still aware that there's this countdown going on. And so with the Kindle, that just goes away.
Yeah, but apparently, though, the rumor has it that Amazon is working on Android tablets sort of to be the next wave for the Kindle brand. So, but I think that the e-ink will continue to live on for students and for people that are big readers because you do get crazy battery life. The resolution is higher than any other tablet is right now.
Right.
And is only getting better. Page turning is very fast now. It used to be fairly slow. So all of that stuff will, mean that will continue to live on as a special, special kind of device only for reading.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just think this is such an incredibly exciting time, that we're in for not only internet stuff, web apps and connectivity, but all the different devices and all the things that we're able to do. I mean, it's pretty amazing. Even though I'm going to be driving across North Dakota over Memorial Day. I'm just going off by myself to take photographs, actually, with my new camera. But
if, what new camera?
Oh, I bought a new Nikon D5100.
Oh, ooh.
A couple new lenses and stuff. And but so I'm
Ansel Adams on the road, baby.
Yeah, right.
You're going to Yellowstone too, right?
I'm
going to
end up in Yellowstone and
the
Tetons
awesome.
And all that. But and I'm doing it mainly because my family hates it when I take my camera and lenses when we're on vacation. And my kids are constantly, Dad, come on. I go, look, I'm trying to set up this shot. Just give me 2 seconds. No, come on. And so, you know, there's something about anxiety and photography that don't really work well together. So right. I'm going to go off on my own. But anyway, the point is I'm looking at connectivity through North Dakota and parts of Montana, and it basically blows.
Oh, man.
And so it's, you know, that's the other... That's sort of the flip side of this is, you know, since 80% of the people in the country live in urban areas where there's halfway decent connectivity wireless, you get into some of these rural areas and they're just, it's just horrible.
I think that most of the country, though, at truck stops are wired up with Wi-Fi you can buy by the hour.
Oh, really? Okay. Well,
yeah. This any big truck stop, you should be able to find Wi-Fi there, either free or you know, a reasonable rate, a couple bucks for an hour. You know?
Plus, there's McDonald's every 10 miles, and I can get free Wi-Fi there.
That's true.
So, oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah. Free. Yep. Don't even have to pay. There you go.
Except I think they limit you to, I think, an hour and a half or an hour or something like that.
Yeah, but God, if I can't stay in a McDonald's for more than about a half an hour.
Yeah, you can only eat so many fries and...
And I am trying to bulk up this time of year.
Well, yeah. You gotta do that for the summer, baby.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh,
well,
geez.
So what's coming up? So I know today and tomorrow there's Drupal Camp going on, and next week the WordPress MSP meeting. But because Memorial Day is coming, next Friday we're not going to have a gang podcast. But also there's events have really slowed, and they do this time of year anyway. But do you guys know of anything else that's coming up?
Well, I'm going off to Glue in Denver with some other Minnesota folks.
Yeah. And, when does that start?
Cloud APIs and big data. Starts Tuesday evening and runs through Thursday evening. So it's basically just a two and a half day kind of thing. So, GlueCon is the... Is the hashtag, and I'll be live blogging. Oh,
I was just going to ask if you're going to. Yeah.
Oh God, I have to. I live blog my brains out at these things, and you know it's a geek event. I mean, it's definitely a developer event. So you know, a good portion of it goes right over my head, but I try to capture what I can. But I'm also, I got to tell you, I'm going to be doing video interviews, and you're going to hate me, Steve. Guess what I'm going to be doing them with? An Olympus LS20M.
Is that the one that has video in it?
Yeah, I got an early review unit directly from Olympus. I don't even get the manual. It's not even printed yet.
Well, wait a minute. What about your buddy Steve?
Well, here's who hooked me up with it is Robert Stevens at Best Buy, because I'm going to be doing some stuff for him while I'm there. He'd love to be there, but he's in Europe. So, so I'm really excited about getting to use a new toy. This thing looks to be awesome. I mean, HD video and, you know, high def, what do you call it? HD audio, I guess, right?
Yep.
What we do with our Olympus LS10s, which are audio only, but they added video to this new one, and they're saying it's going to definitely more than replace the Flip.
Well, the only slam that I've heard about it is that the lens is in the top of the unit, so you got to point it at somebody. So you're
But I'm going to handle that. I'm just going to put the little mini tripod underneath it and use that as a handle.
Oh, perfect.
You know, I'm used to doing that anyway, and I figure I sure can operate the thing. It'll have very familiar controls and menus and everything.
Well, put a thing in the show notes about this device, because there's a couple of others that are like it, but the Olympus LS10 that you and I both have, the quality of this thing is so outstanding.
And, you know, it is.
That's been one of the things that I found interesting is that all of our ability to communicate is so dramatically higher that if you're listening to this podcast and you're not doing audio or you're not doing video for your organization or for yourself, it's just there's no excuses anymore with screencast mm-hmm. technology and everything that's out there. And it's so laughingly cheap in comparison to where it's ever been before that it's like, oh my God. I mean, look at you, Graham, with your interviews.
Yeah. And I'm not even anywhere near as geeky as you guys are, but I can do these things. You know, I mean, this LS10, Olympus LS10, it's like I tell people, this is a studio grade handheld digital recorder.
Yeah.
That sells now for what, $200?
Yep.
I mean, it's crazy. People look at it and go, what is that thing? You know, is that some new kind of phone? No. But I said, hey, bands use these things to record their music, so yeah, it can surely handle my my audio interviews. So, yeah, so I'm kind of stepping up to video for the first time at, well, I mean, I've done a couple iPhone videos in the past, but not really. But I'm going to step up to try to do a whole mess of short, you know, 3 to 4 minute anyway interviews, you know, a la Scoble. And we'll see. I'll be interviewing lots of really interesting startups and key internet players. A lot of CTOs and founders show up at this event. So we're going to have, I mean, just look at the GlueCon agenda. It's a pretty heavy, heavy duty kind of folks showing up. 400 plus, I guess. So I'm looking forward to it.
Well, we'll follow you. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Cool.
Well, thanks, gentlemen.
Yep. We'll talk to you after we get the gardens planted.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
yeah, and get rained on big time, I guess, this
two,
weekend.
2 weeks, we'll be back.
Yep.
With another Minivate Gang podcast.
You bet.
Thanks, gents. See ya.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Yep.